Christopher Mulan, founder and chief market strategist for the Technical Traders. Welcome to the Competent Investor. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Chris, right now we seem to be seeing a bit more of a broadening in the stock markets. We've seen a major narrowing over the last couple of years, kind of into that Mag 7. So is this an indication of health or of, you know, possibly running out of steam for the markets here?
Yeah, it's been an interesting couple of years. As you mentioned, the Mag 7s were so powerful there for the last couple of years, just really finding that focus. And now we've kind of seen the Mag 7s kind of, when you look at the Mag 7 ETF, like for example, it's just been trading sideways in a big range. It's kind of lost a lot of its momentum. And people have started to kind of dissect. They're like, forget the Mag 7s. Let's go to the little nitty gritty companies that supply all the parts to make AI actually function, not just the final product companies. And so we've seen like, you know, memory, like Micron, all those sectors in stocks do exceptionally well. And so we are starting to see things broaden. And recently we did see a contraction in AI. There was pretty good selling. We saw the NASDAQ sell off semiconductors over the past month or so. But recently we've had this big pop in the markets. And this time, you know, as the money was moving out of the AI space in the past month, it wasn't exiting the stock market. It was actually broadening out, as you just mentioned, Tom. And we've been seeing, for example, like the equal weighted stock market, when you look at the S&P 500 equal weighted, it has been moving up quite significantly. And I can show you like a chart here. If we take a look at, let's go to the QQQ first. If we look at the QQQ, you can see here price has rotated and sold off. And we've recently had a really nice cluster of cycle lows. We had a sentiment shift right here. The market was on the verge of really breaking down, but it found traction and rallied. But the NASDAQ and tech really started to sell off. And where that money was going was more so to RSP, which is the equal weighted S&P 500. So it's been going in the opposite direction. And it continues to just stair step its way up. A series of these little bull flags, it is pointing to higher pricing. So this to me is actually a sign of strength. I think we're seeing small caps and micro caps come back to life. I think we're going to see, I think, one more big push in the equities market. It actually might be fairly explosive. We've got pretty good earnings across the board. Even though the internals are still a little mixed, money is not running away from stocks. It's just saying, hey, AI is a little overdone. It's getting volatile. It's had some pullbacks. It's got a little bit of negative news here and there. And so now people are saying, I'm going to go move to some other stocks that maybe have room to run and aren't quite so volatile. So this to me is a strong sign. Same with the Russell 2000. We've been seeing it kind of work its way up. The Russell 2000 has a very strong little bull flag pattern here. And actually, it's showing that we could see the Russell rally to about 313, which is about a 4.5% move. And just based on this chart, it could happen any day and it'll only take probably 3 or 4 days to get there. So if the Russell pops, we're probably going to see the S&P 500, the Dow, the NASDAQ, they'll all most likely pop. And all the indices actually have this little bull flag chart pattern. They all actually look fairly strong in the short term.
So stepping back to kind of understand how you look at these things, Chris, you always look at price, time, and sentiment, right? So What are those three factors kind of showing you about this chart? Is this, you know, you can see, I'm assuming that's volume at the bottom. Volume seems to be coming down. We have a long time in this structure, in this chart structure. So are those the kind of things that, you know, start to indicate to you to exercise some caution?
Well, you know, volume works really, really well for short-term trading, especially for day trading. When it comes to catching trend trades and things like that, it's not as powerful as people think. I think people give volume much too much weighting. There's a general bias for the markets to go up, and the markets can do it on light volume and it can do it on declining volume. You don't need big volume for price to go up. There's a natural, that's what I like about trading the indices themselves, is that there are multiple cycles and waves of money rolling into the stock market. We've got the economy growing, we've got population growing, we've got people who who have a portion of their paychecks put in every week, every 2 weeks, every month. People, you know, invest quarterly, every 6 months, every year. So there's a constant trickle of money moving into the stock market. And so the only time, you know, when we generally see bigger volume is actually to the downside, usually because there's, say there's 1 million shares moving into something every day. Well, you need 1,000,001 shares like to counter it, to sell it. And so usually on the downside, there's elevated volume. If we zoom back on the chart, you'll generally notice sell-offs and moves to the downside have elevated volume. As price moves down, volume's usually ramping up. So I don't get too deep into the volume when you're looking at cycles that are kind of rotating through the markets. But right now, like when you look at it, light volume is fine. It doesn't really bother me. What I like to look at is, are the moving averages layered nicely? Is the 150-day sloping up? Is price above it? If so, you're probably in a bull market. If the 50-day and the 20-day are, you know, the 20 days above the 50-day, then you're also in a nice trending environment. We want to make sure there's bullish price patterns. So I like to just look at these things. And the moving averages give you multiple time frames, right? Like the green moving average just says, hey, over the past 150 trading sessions, the price is going up on average. So you know the long-term cycle, the tide is going up. And so if the tide's going up, pretty much pullbacks and pauses are just that. They're just a temporary move before it goes higher. And so when I look at this chart, I say, okay, well, it's trending up from the long-term charts. From the short-term moving averages, it's trending higher. It's not really showing any signs of big, heavy volume selling. There are some elevated pullbacks and selling, but that's just profit-taking. Usually you'll see the market rally up. There's always going to be some bouts. It's not like we're seeing huge elevated volume every day and it's struggling to go anywhere, because that's when the bulls and bears, the buyers and sellers, are fighting each other. And so, and then sentiment-wise, we have sentiment is very bullish. The VIX is low. Put-call ratio has been a little bit elevated, and it's slowly drifting down. So people are becoming more and more bullish. There is a tipping point there where that actually becomes a contrarian play. But right now, the market's actually still looking good from both price, time, and sentiment. Everything is aligning. And you know, if we go back to, we'll look at the NASDAQ real quick and zoom back, but this is the same for all of the indices, is we have, there's multiple different time cycles. And we've just had, believe it or not, the same cycle that just happened about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, are the same type of cycles that actually happened over here. There's a cluster of multiple waves that roll through the market that kind of consolidate, and they end up creating a very strong sentiment shift. And when price does that, usually price goes dormant and then it starts to break down, and then you see panic selling. And during, when you see a wave of panic selling and you see everything sell off with it, precious metals and pretty much all other asset classes, that's a sign of like sentiment is now, you know, very, very bearish. It becomes a contrarian play. We saw the same thing over here. Market went sideways, then it started to break down and got weaker. And then we saw a small bout of panic selling. Everything sold off during that wave, and we got into another cycle low. And so we've seen the same here recently. We had a pause, started to break down, and then we actually had a bout of panic. And now the market is putting in this pivot low, you could say. So this is just, these waves roll through the markets. We usually have 5 or 12 of these cycles that go through every year. This is what I focus on trading, is trying to catch these waves from a position trader standpoint. Some of these trades can last, you know, several months. Some of them can last only a few weeks. It really just depends on the market, but that's kind of where we are. We have everything in line again for both time, price, and sentiment is now favorable for this.
Mm-hmm. When we think about sentiment, Chris, are there other indicators that kind of, let's say, bolster that sentiment, like the amount of leverage being used by market participants?
Well, I like to look at the put call ratio. It's not giving us much insight right now. I have ways, you know, to follow it. And one of the easiest ways is really this, putting a 20 day moving average on the put call ratio. This is the total put call ratio, putting a 20 day and then putting a 5 day. And if the 5 day is below it, below the 20 day, usually you're actually seeing the market rally and go fairly, start, you know, it's going to want to keep melting higher. Usually as the market's melting higher, people have FOMO. Usually people are on the, you know, emotional traders are generally on the wrong side of the market. So in this scenario right now, as you and I are speaking, the markets are pushing up, hitting all-time highs. There's a lot of people who aren't in the market because they thought the market was topping. They don't know how to identify trends and trend reversals, and they're trading emotions, right? They don't want to, they think the market's going to correct. And so we're in a little bit of a FOMO phase. I mentioned this on Friday to members saying, listen, this is kind of the FOMO phase. And if the market starts to run a little bit higher this week, we're going to see a lot of people pile in and chase the market higher because they feel like they're getting left behind. And that's good. It's going to fuel our positions because we're long the S&P 500, we're long the NASDAQ. And so this is kind of, this is one of the sentiment tools. Gold usually works as a sentiment tool, but usually we'll see like if gold is going up and the stock market's struggling, that's a sign that we got to be aware. But over the last like year or so, or even longer, we're seeing gold and stocks rally at the same time and sell off at the same time. So gold is kind of decoupled temporarily from that. So, you know, it's usually a good barometer of kind of what's going on. But right now it seems like when it's risk on, people pile into stocks and precious metals. When the market's selling off, they dump both of them. They should kind of be kind of a little bit, you know, opposite to each other, but they're not. So the put-call ratio is just one of those things that I like to follow. And when it comes to leverage, I do find in this late, I believe we're very late stage bull market. I think we have one major big leg higher potentially. And what's really interesting here, Tom, is all these different ETFs are coming out for these sectors, right? Now you've got the memory sector ETF, which is just came out blazing with hundreds of millions of shares traded every day. It's, you know, Micron up like 1500% at one point. We've got leveraged ETFs around SpaceX and inverse ETFs and all of that stuff. So this is very much so like early, you know, 2021, where everybody just piles in and takes advantage of leverage and these trends. And I think eventually it's going to come to an end. There's always going to be a financial reset at some point, and the question is when. But we're inching closer because there's all these leverage tools, and we're seeing a lot of people trade leveraged ETFs here, trying to amplify their returns.
Mm-hmm. So I guess inherent in that, Chris, what is, let's say, the cause of the end of this type of investing era? Is this higher rates, you know, the debt equation slash what basically the US currency, and in a lot of ways, I think most fiat currencies around the world, is that kind of what we're coming to the end to that breaks this decades long bull market?
It's tough to gauge. We're not going to know what actually is going to be like, you know, what's going to break the markets. Something's going to happen, then the market's going to melt down, and there could be a series of things that cause a breakdown. Currencies, obviously, you know, fiat currencies, there's worries of the dollar collapsing, of all kinds of different currencies having problems. I mean, this is just the FinViz chart, and it gives us a view of kind of the major currencies here. And this is the daily chart. And I at some point, we're going to see, I think, huge swings in the currency. I think we're very close to a very big move in the economy. Eventually, like when it stalls out, we're going to see currencies probably rally. I think the dollar has good potential. But, you know, recently we've seen the Fed come out. We've had the yen have a huge pop and move. We've seen the dollar pull back. And I think a lot of people are getting, I mean, a little too zoomed in. Like right now, when we look at these daily charts, you can see the dollar had a very sharp hit, and it's pulled back and it's trying to find stability. You can see the yen did the opposite. Huge rally. Everybody's talking about the yen and what's going on there. We've seen the Canadian dollar move up and have a fairly significant rally over the past month or so. But I think it's always interesting to, you know, you need to step back, look at a different time frame. So when you look at this, you're like, a lot of people are like, oh, the dollar's falling, it's crashing, it's topped. And they're like, the yen is about to rally and it's rallying, it's in a new bull market. Well, if we look at it, Tom, from just the weekly chart, and you look at the long-term trend is the dollar is up and it's only pulled down to a healthy support level. If we go and we look at the euro, it's had a strong bounce, it's bounced into resistance. It still has a series of lower highs, lower lows, it's in a downtrend. And you go to the yen. It's had obviously a news-driven move. It's had a big pop. It's moved right up into resistance. And now it's trying to figure out what it's going to do. So I think people always get too zoomed in. They hear the news. The news is designed to grab your emotions and really get you thinking and moving. And it causes a lot of people to take trades, right? And so people are looking in at the daily charts. And I think they're too zoomed in because you just have to step back. This is still a news-driven move. There's initial reaction and movements between algos and investors rebalancing to any news. And everything right now has just recoiled to either support or resistance. And so the next move from here is going to be the most important one. If the dollar has a leg down and the yen has a leg higher, then we've got a game changer. But right now, it's just a news-driven blip on the chart, and we have to see how it's going to play out.
Mm-hmm. Chris, as we're thinking about this, you know, era type of thinking, obviously we had Powell as the Fed chair for the last several years, and now we have Warsh coming out and saying, in a way, that this is a new era for forward guidance. There's going to be far less forward guidance. They haven't really moved rates yet, but what data are they looking at or leaning on in order to say that there is no need for a rate adjustment at this point, whether higher or lower?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's definitely not my expertise, but I have no doubt. I mean, it feels like they're playing the Trump game. Just keep things unknown and very random, right? Like everybody's on their heels. We don't know what's going to happen. News can pop at any time. They're completely changing the way things are done. So people can't start to front run and read into things. Having that random approach, I mean, it has its pros and its cons. And so I think they're doing a good job of keeping people not knowing what's going to happen. And, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, to be honest, but they're definitely changing the way the Fed does things. And so people are running blind. I mean, it's just going to start to put in more of a gut feeling of for pricing as the stuff goes into this, because you can't read into every word quite the same. So people are going to start to price things probably a little bit differently. And then when something does happen, unfortunately, it's probably going to create a very sharp pop or drop on that news, because it's really, you know, a real surprise, I think, in a lot of cases. So it's just adding uncertainty. It's adding a little extra volatility. And I think inflation is going to be a major problem here. The interest rate charts, like when you look at the all of them, it doesn't matter which one you look at, the 5, the 10, the 30 year. I mean, they all have these very, very strong bull flag patterns pointing to dramatically higher pricing, which is not good. That will cause a financial crisis. So, I mean,
pricing or yield?
This is the yield here.
Okay.
So for example, if we take a look at the 30 year, I mean, it's over 5% again. It's been over 5% for something like 45 or 50 days this year, I think, in total, I think it said, or I can't remember what it was, but it's the last time we've seen the 5% over this was in 2027, just before the financial crisis. So there's a lot of concerns. A lot of people are saying, hey, if I'm going to put my money, you know, to work, it better be making a higher yield, because there's higher risk. So there's risk keeps getting put in here. And the rates look like they want to keep going higher, and they're starting to break out. So, I mean, this is going to be a huge wild card. If we do have a financial crisis, it could be linked to rates kind of moving higher and running away. But I mean, who knows what the Fed is going to do? That's what I think. There's been this huge shift, and so we don't know how rates are going to be controlled. But there's a lot of wild cards this year. I mean, there's the Benner cycle, which is that farmer from the 1800s that came up with these cycles, and he's done a pretty good job. And all of his analysis says, hey, 2026 is when these cycles generally come to an end, not always, but is when we're supposed to have a major peak. And I mean, I think I have that chart here. If we just take a look at this Benner cycle, you know, more or less his cycle's called whenever you have a peak at the top or a peak in the middle, that is when there's a cycle high. And so we had the 2000 tech bubble, 2007 financial crisis. We had COVID, which was 2019, 2020. The next peak here is 2026. And then it's saying we're going to have weakness to 2032. So I feel like things are building. The world is chaotic. The amount of ridiculousness that is going on and with beyond the financial markets and stuff is out of control. People have lost all logic. There's no common sense anymore. Something big is going to break, and it could be multiple things that break. So I think right now you got to be long the equities market. There's no doubt equities are the place to be. That's where we're long, but you got to have a game plan, because eventually there will be a peak in the markets. We'll eventually see some, like I believe we could see a very strong parabolic spike here, big gains to be made, but I think it could reverse very sharply and we have a huge correction. And I've always stated that I believe we're always very close to a bear market. The key is you don't take advantage or try to trade the bear market until it actually happens. So we keep riding this market up, but we know we're inching closer and closer to some catastrophe. And it only, you know, they break very quickly. So you have to be quick to be able to identify, protect your capital so that you don't ride and give back a huge chunk of these gains.
Mm-hmm. Chris, obviously a big part of basically everything in the economy here is oil. And I saw a tweet this morning saying that Iran is no longer, you know, basically willing to negotiate with Trump. We're recording this on Monday morning, August 10th. So if we think about how the oil price has already, you know, shifted things around, I think a lot of people expected more of a dramatic move. But what is the oil price and the oil chart telling you at this point?
Yeah. Well, the chart of oil is still actually pointing to higher pricing here. If we just looking at using Fibonacci extension, which is one of my favorite technical tools, this is just basing it off the rally and basing it off this, what is actually a nice ABC correction, a three-wave pullback. If this starts to break higher, we're going to see oil hit about 100. And I mean, to be honest with what's going on, I kind of thought oil would actually still be higher than that. But overall, oil has been moving very much so as we expected. We had the initial breakout here with the huge spike in what's going on. Eventually, things kind of got sorted out. It put in a bit of a topping phase. And then the Strait of Hormuz was supposedly resolved. And the premium came back out of the price. Then suddenly it sparked back up again. And here we are. Now we're into resistance right through here. And now it's pulled back. And I don't think this war is over. This is going to continue to drag on forever, I feel like. And so we're going to see oil go a whole lot higher. And a whole lot higher, back up to around that 100 range. I think that's going to keep inflation concerns up. I think that's going to probably help keep interest rates up. You know, right now it's like if oil goes up, we see interest rates go up, we see bonds go down, the price of bonds. So that's been like the key driver is like, just look at oil and you know what rates and bonds are doing for the day. And so that's what I think is going to happen. I think the bond market's going to be very weak here. I think the rates are all on the verge or starting to break out on all the time frames. The bond market, like when we look at TLT, is on the verge of a huge, well, it already is kind of breaking down. But if we go way back in time, I mean, it's going to go and break down to some very significant levels that we haven't seen in a long time. And if rates were to ever pop and break out, we're going to see TLT trading at 60 or 40 bucks a share, which is going to devastate anybody who's invested in, you know, actual bonds. Like they're already down 53%. They could fall another 40, 50% from here. So oil is, I think, a very key thing right now in terms of understanding what's going on with inflation and what's going on with the price of bonds. And oil to me is going to be back up in that above 100 probably here in the next month, maybe even sooner. And that's going to help energy stocks. Energy stocks are primed and ready. They're looking like they're ready to break out and start a rally as well.
Chris, I know this is kind of out of your, let's say, trading purview here, but don't you think the market is just going to adapt and start working around the strait if it just continues to be closed?
I think so. I mean, I don't know much about the space, but somebody was saying the other day that like 90% of the traffic is just going a different way or something like that. Or like there's a reroute or something. So I haven't dove into it, but I think people are going to sort it out. Maybe there's a, you know, different way for things to happen. And I think the world's somewhat adjusting to it. I feel like we haven't seen the ripple effect come all the way through. Like, we've seen oil pricing go up and a few minor things, but it definitely doesn't feel like a COVID. It's not like the whole world's been shut off or anything like that. So the world, there's always, like, humans are very intuitive and they adapt very quickly. So I think a lot of people are getting numb to, you know, the Trump tweets and all this stuff, right? All this volatility, it's actually just become normal for us. And I think the Strait of Hormuz is the same. I mean, how many times has the war been on and been off? It's like 25 times. So you just get numb to it. And now it's, and this is the same, I think, is kind of what is happening, is going to happen with the Fed, is you don't know what the hell's going on. Everything's changed. So it's really, you just drift through and you follow price and trends. And I think that's all you can do. Like, it's just, uncertainty means you just have to have better position in risk management. You need to understand trends when they're stalling out or changing direction. So I think it's going to make trading and investing a little bit different, but it's not the end of the world. In fact, it might actually make things better depending on the style of trading that you do.
Mm-hmm. Chris, you mentioned earlier that gold has kind of flip-flopped between being in a lot of ways inverse to major indices and a lot of markets to trading a lot like a risk asset. Why do you think that is?
I'm not sure. I mean, we did see, I mean, they were trading together for a long time, and then suddenly we had, you know, these two moves. This one here for gold and silver did a lot of damage. Both of these caused a lot of damage. A lot of people saw huge profits literally just vaporize so quickly. And so I think that did a lot of damage. And I think it spooked a lot of people out of the space, or people who gave up on it. And they're just like, not going to look at it. I'm just going to ignore it, leave it for a few years and let it do its thing. And so I think there's a lot of pain in the space from people who kind of have rode those down and saw those. Cause I know a lot of people that we're up millions and then it drops and they gave back like a million or two, like literally on that one drop day, people gave back huge, huge profits. And so it hurt a lot of people. And so people seem, for some reason, gold just started to move to be a little more in sync with the stock market. They're like, yeah, if I'm buying stocks, I'm buying gold. I don't know why exactly. I feel like there was a sentiment shift. But you know, gold and silver, they haven't been quite trading the same since those big drops. I think there's been like a shock. Everybody's kind of recovering. People are starting to get really excited right now with this recent move up. I do think we're going to see gold move up to, you know, 4,500, maybe even 4,600 or so. I think silver has potential to drift and rally higher. The key thing here, though, is technically the long-term moving average is down. We've got gold and silver making a series of lower highs, lower lows. Technically, they are actually in a bearish environment. So this is a bounce or a rally, a bear market rally at this point until it proves that it's turned a corner and actually has bullish price action and wants to start to climb higher.
Mm-hmm. Is there any indicator that's showing that this might be a bull trap here, Chris?
Well, I think maybe you mean like a bear trap. So I believe we're in a bear market. I think it's rallying up. It's getting a lot of people excited. I haven't seen this many people excited and giddy about the precious metal space in a long time, since like just before it peaked. So everybody's saying the bottom is in, everybody's getting excited. We're in a bear market. It's rallying up. It's sucking everybody in to say, I'm getting long. I'm buying more. Here we go. And so it's going to trap the bulls. They're going to get in. And this is nothing more than just an oversold condition, having a relief bounce, you know, and moving higher. And it's going to trap them in there. And then I think it's going to sell off and go lower. So that's, at this point, that's what the long-term charts are pointing to. Short-term, if you zoom in too close, it looks really bullish, super strong. And it's like, hey, full speed ahead, let's pile in. But when you step back at this view, and same with silver, this is still just a bounce within a downtrend. And you got to be very cautious because they can fizzle out really quickly.
Mm-hmm. So what would, let's say, negate that downtrend? Is, you know, weekly closes, monthly closes above that trend line?
Yeah, well, I generally, what I want to see is like an impulse move. So you have a really strong move that can break a couple very significant highs. And depending on, you know, what you consider a significant high, like this one definitely is a significant high and this previous one up here. So naturally, if gold is to rally up and break through, say, these two significant highs, then you've broken through two resistance levels. So if something breaks through two ceilings, the first pause and pullback can potentially be seen as a bullish chart pattern. And so when it starts to turn up and rally, you could have that second half of the move. And now it's making a series of higher lows. It's going to be making like higher highs. So it'll be into an uptrend. So it still has more work to do. I think it still needs to push a little bit higher. Then we need to see it hold its value up here, not just collapse right back down. And for, you know, the 20-day moving average to be above the 50-day, which is the pink line above the blue line, we might start to see the 150-day start to slope back up, which it's a very slow moving average. I wouldn't really care if it meanders around here, plus or minus a little bit. But overall, we want to see price build a bullish chart pattern. So the higher this move goes up, and then the more controlled the pause is afterwards, the stronger it looks. And then when it starts to run higher, you could potentially get long and play that next big move. Because gold has potential here. If it was to really take off, the next stop is about $8,000 or $8,600. And so if this does find a bottom and builds a base and starts to go higher, it's going to be a great opportunity. It's going to be huge. Gold miners will do very well. The whole precious metal space will do well. Silver will do the same. And precious metal mining stocks will do the same.
That's kind of where I wanted to go next, Chris, is asking you about the miners. Like, do the charts basically reflect the exact same thing for the miners, or does sentiment, you know, cut a lot harder within the mining side of the precious metal space?
Yeah, miners are a little, well, they're a lot more volatile than gold, but they are pointing to similar. The only catch with miners is they're fast moving. They're more aggressive. Generally, they're more aggressive short-term traders. We have these huge gaps in the price. So you do get these emotional moves. You get these waves of FOMO and people pile in and you can see there's a huge volume spike. And it's really tough to get a gauge on this move. I'm not a fan of two giant gaps. The amount of sentiment and emails and messages we're getting about how gold has bottomed and we have to get in and all this stuff and it's so strong. This has me very, very worried, is because it seems like everybody in the precious metal space is saying we're in a bull market, we're long, you know, all of that. So I look at miners a little differently. I see them there. It has had a nice impulse wave to the upside. It's broken, you could say, this high. It's broken more or less these two highs through here. So if it does pull back and hold its ground, and starts to run and break out, it could be very good. But I'm questioning this move because it feels and looks like an emotional move of people just piling in, chasing, and the market's kind of gapping higher. So it's a very emotional space, and it can fizzle out very quickly. So again, just like gold, this is the same thing. We've got this nice move up. Now we need to see, you know, is it going to hold value or is it going to roll over and fall right back down? And that's where we're at. We have these mixed signals with precious metals. The long-term trend is down. Short-term price action is just starting to turn positive slightly. And so when you have mixed signals, like, we're usually on the sidelines. We don't want to hold something that is a bit of a coin toss. We want to clearly get in when it's trending higher. And we definitely don't want to hold it if we have no idea which way it's really going. And the overall trend here is more or less still down. It still has a series of lower highs. You know, you could argue this has a higher high, but it still has a series of lower lows through here. And the fact that we got this volume surge just feels like it's kind of a crowded play. And that makes me worried when, you know, everybody in the space seems to jump in at the same time.
Right. Chris, you were saying earlier that you're still kind of looking for a larger, basically, crash or pullback in the broader equity markets here. So
yep.
You've been talking a lot about how lumber kind of shows us how strong the economy is. Is that, let's say, one of your favorite indicators for showing a type of rollover in the actual economic activity.
Not exactly. Not no, but it's interesting. I was looking at lumber the other day. Like this is, let me just go to the, this is the weekly chart of lumber. You can see in the last 2 weeks, lumber has just fallen off a cliff. If we take a look at it, let's go to the daily chart here. We've seen lumber have a really big sell-off, big volume ramping up. People are getting away from lumber for whatever reason. This can be a leading indicator because lumber is used in construction and it usually is seen as a bullish indicator. So if it is selling off, it can mean potentially things are about to slow down. And what's really interesting here, Tom, is we've seen that big drop in lumber pricing. And if you look at the wood ETF, which is the timber, we've seen the exact opposite. Lumber has literally gone off a cliff, and we're seeing lumber stocks, companies actually go up. And so I find this really interesting. I think we saw the same type of scenario over here where, believe it or not, we saw lumber stocks this year. They sold off really sharply. And lumber sold off just like it's doing right now. Lumber stocks held up and then eventually actually pushed even higher as lumber was falling. And then suddenly lumber stocks caught up and sold off. So this is a really interesting kind of divergence where I think for some reason everybody's piling into lumber stocks. Yet I actually think we're going to see this ETF roll over and actually have a fairly significant sell-off. The percentage drop we saw previously equaled about a 12% drop. We've seen lumber right now just drop about 12%. And the last time we saw this with the lumber stocks, they also fell about 12%. So it's an interesting play. And lumber is definitely one of those things you can look at and be like, hey, if lumber prices are falling, why? Has demand suddenly just kind of dried up? Are subdivisions pulling the plug? Like, I mean, there's a lot of homes for sale where I am now and nothing is selling and the prices are new pricing, nothing is budging. So this to me is a big worry. The home prices are extremely expensive and you don't get anything special and nothing is selling. And there's some subdivisions that have stalled out and gone under here. So it is a concern, and lumber is one of those tools for sure that give us a little bit of, it's just one of those things that just gives us a little bit of insight. Hey, lumber is like plummeting here, maybe people know what's going on. Maybe the housing industry is about to dry up and homes are about to start to liquidate and home prices fall. And as soon as home prices start to fall even more, the next leg down is going to kill the housing space. And of course, lumber will take a hit because people aren't going to be building homes anymore for a while.
Mm-hmm. Well, Chris, I guess, you know, kind of returning to that question and a different part of it, instead of the indicator, what do you see as a, let's say, a defensive position to be taking if we do get, you know, some type of a broad market crash? Is there anywhere to hide other than, let's say, cash?
Yeah, depending how it goes, I do believe the dollar is actually going to do very well. I mean, when you look at the US dollar, whenever we see kind of global chaos, the US dollar tends to rise. It has formed this very large basing formation. It went from the long-term moving average sloping down, price below it, to it flatlining, to now it's sloping up and prices above it. So, you know, we went from the dollar being in a bear market and precious metals were in a bull market. Now we flipped. Now we got the dollar in a bull market, precious metals are in a bear market. If we have chaos, uncertainty, we could eventually see this dollar continue to actually come back to life and I think shock a lot of people of where the dollar could go. In fact, I have the dollar potentially forecasted all the way up to about 121. So there's big potential for the dollar index to move up. A lot of other currencies will crash. And so this is one play. I think another play is sitting on the sidelines. Earning interest is a fabulous position if everything is collapsing. If you don't want to be in stocks, you don't want to be in metals because all of these things can fall together or even be in bonds. Cash earning 3-4% is way better than losing 30 or 40%. So that is a position. And depending how the stock market rolls over, Tom, eventually our strategy will play inverse ETF. So as it starts having these waves to the downside, which is a long ways away from now, eventually we can play an inverse ETF. So every time there's a breakdown and an extension to the downside, we're in an ETF that is like, you know, shooting higher. And it's a pretty unbelievable feeling when everything's falling apart and you're actually gunning and hoping for things to fall apart. I mean, deep down, I want a bear market to happen to reset pricing and give everybody a fresh start. It's going to obviously hurt a lot of people. It does, but I think the markets are just so overdone and stretched that we need something to break to reset. It's almost like we need that rain, that lightning storm, to cleanse the air, revalue things, and reset the financial space. But the markets, who knows, man, they are resilient. They just keep grinding higher year after year. And that's why it doesn't matter what our opinions are, what we think is going to happen. You just have to follow price. That is the only thing that pays. So if metals turn up and start to rally higher, we'll be long metals again. If the stock market keeps going higher, we're going to be long it. If the market rolls over, we're out, and eventually we'll find a different asset. So that's the nice thing, is it really doesn't matter what Trump does, what the wars happen, you know, what's going on in the economy. It doesn't really, it factors into what we're doing, but it doesn't actually change our strategy. We still just follow price and cycles and sentiment. If you understand which direction something's going, you know whether to hold it or not.
Yeah. Chris, you know, kind of tying in this idea of a major pullback, what is the recovery trap and what does it cost you as your most precious currency?
Yeah, that's a good question. So like if we were to just go back to, let's go to the NASDAQ here. Let's go to the monthly chart. So this is what a lot of people don't look at. Like the recovery trap is what gets a lot of people, and people don't look at it. And this actually, precious metals is just as good, probably even better to cover it in. Long story short is you have a huge rally, and I believe we're about to go into this euphoric phase, this big peak in the overall market. I think there's one last hurrah left in this, in the economy, and the market sells off. And even if you avoid this sell-off, and even if you sit in cash, yeah, you're earning interest and stuff, but the recovery trap is you're wasting all these years. You're wasting, like, you know, 15 years before you get back to break even. And that's what you don't want to do. Is, you know, if you're in your older years, you're closer to retirement or already retired, the last thing you want to do is suffer a hit and then have to withdraw from your money to subsidize your living and have all these years go by. And I mean, gold, silver miners, they did this as well. When we go back and we look, 2011, I mean, we really didn't see metals really start to expand and break out until, you know, 12 years later. That's a long time of having your money not do a whole lot, miners losing a lot. And so this is the recovery trap. If you don't know when a trend changes direction, you're trapped in that position for 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, and you're wasting time. And my whole focus is I use a strategy which I call asset revesting, which is we understand when an asset has changed direction and we just step aside. We get out of it and we go put our money into an asset that is starting a new uptrend so that our money's always working for us. We don't want to just hold something because, hey, the fundamentals are good. I like it. It should go higher. Those are the perfect scenarios for actually being stuck in a really crappy position for 5 or 10 years when you could get into it later and play the big rally that follows. So that bear market kind of trap is time. People don't value time. People are always looking for returns. And I'm like, and you really need to look at how much time could you waste in this position. Say precious metals, like for example here, if we zoom out, if precious metals start to consolidate and trade sideways here, they could do the same thing. We could have another whack of years where it really doesn't do anything. It plateaus. You go back in time. I mean, we've seen this. It rallies up and it plateaus for decades. Silver's done the same. Miners have done it. We don't know. And so I don't want to risk holding something that may just drift sideways or even drift lower for a long time. And time is the most valuable resource we have. And I've ridden a bear market down in 2000. I blew up my account in 2000, trading some of the best companies, the best stocks who had growth like quarter after quarter, but a falling stock market pulls pricing down. And so I learned a long time ago, I'm like, hey, if it's going down, I just don't want it. I'll just buy it back later. And so that's been my whole core strategy is protect the capital, protect what we have, and let's make our money work like for us as much as possible.
Yeah, I think in this space, it's really easy to keep listening to that narrative and love a particular asset so much and be so sold on that. But as you say, price ends up being king at the end of the day. And if you lose a lot of years just trying to get back to that previous high, we try to, and this is something I've tried to kind of underscore, I guess, is to be less emotional about the actual asset and mm-hmm. be more understanding of the end game, which is just trying to make your money work for you, right?
Yeah. And it's tough. I mean, I actually wrote a book on this it's coming out next week called After the Rally. Cool. And, you know, the problem is the emotions are so strong. We make emotional decisions. Unfortunately, very few of us will make a logical decision. Like everything I do is very logical. I'm somewhat an engineer. I'm a pilot, all of that stuff. I like checklists. Things need to make sense. It's got to be strategized and figured out, right? That's how I follow things. But most people trade off emotions. And the problem is there's a million opinions online. And when you love something, whatever asset class it is, you naturally gravitate to people who are talking about it in the way that you want to hear. You know, people don't want to hear me saying, gold's in a bear market and it might be dormant forever. Like that's number one way how you get hate mail, right? But that's what I offer is a zero bias analysis. I'm not somebody who's I'm in love with precious metals, but it doesn't mean I'm going to just say it's going higher. Like same like, you know, people in the Bitcoin space pumping it up and now people are suffering. I literally just say how the chart is. The long-term trends of gold and silver based on the timeframes I share are in a bear market. The dollar's in a bull market. I don't want to hold metals right now. We sold silver at 113. We sold gold at 5,100. We're waiting for a new opportunity. And whether that happens in 3 weeks from now or it happens in 3 years from now, we'll just get involved from there. But, you know, I still actually have a pretty bearish outlook on gold. I still think we're going to 36, 3,300. I think silver's going down to 40. And unfortunately, people don't who love the asset and who are especially leaning on the fundamental side because it has the strongest case ever to go higher. They don't like that. And so they're naturally always going to hear everybody and listen to those who are screaming, hey, new bull market's in. This is the start. And then they invest more. And then when the bottom falls, they get stuck in a position where they're down so much. They're just like, I'm just going to ride it out like I have in the past, probably. And I mean, that's what I did. I did that. I've done that many times with many different asset classes. And I've finally have like, I can't do this anymore. It's such a waste of time and money and stress. It's very easy to do. We all do it. So that's what I try and offer. I just offer straight up unbiased. Here's what the charts are saying short term and long term. And we'll just navigate it one bar at a time. And generally it's not in line with what the masses want to hear, but that's the technicals.
Chris, do you think we get to those lows in that same sort of pullback for the general markets as well?
I do. I think we could see there's potential the stock market could peak by the end of this year, the stock market peaks, and we also see gold and silver crash down. I think precious metals will, if we do have this crash start, precious metals will drop, I think, very quickly. Mm-hmm. And they're going to hit those targets potentially within this year. And then I think there'll actually be a screaming opportunity long-term and they'll actually firm up and potentially start going higher while the rest of the stock market and the economy collapses. They do seem to kind of lead and bottom before the rest of the economy. That would be the best case scenario. I believe the best case scenario is for gold to get down to like 3,300, for silver to get to $40. That is like the perfect technical setup pointing to nice, strong, long-term pricing going forward. And it's an opportunity to buy more. You know, it's in a way, people should be excited for gold and silver to have a dip because I think we all know inevitably it's going a whole lot higher So why not want it to go lower and pick it up? Because it's just a matter of time before precious metals are going to be, you know, king of the pile, and fiat currencies are all just going to go to the wayside again. So that's the way I look at it.
Excellent, Chris. Well, I think that's a good place to put a pin in it for today. Is there anything else that you'd like to leave our listeners to think about before we do?
I think you've covered it with all your questions. I think long equities, precious metals, you know, I'm on the sidelines. They're showing some life, but we need to see if it's real life, if it's a bounce or not. And we're going to keep our eye on the dollar and what's going on. If the dollar starts to firm up, it means and find support here. Precious metals are probably going to be under pressure. The equities market could be under pressure. So, and oil is going to be a big player. So we just need to keep our eyes on what's going on and ride those trends.
Excellent. Let us know where your new book is going to be available.
It'll be on Amazon. Yeah.
Perfect. Of course, anybody that wants can follow you at thetechnicaltraders.com and of course on X at the Tech Traders. Chris, thanks so much for your time today. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Tom. Take care.